Hi and welcome back. When we first were getting started, I mentioned that I would be discussing two centuries during this period known as the Golden Age of Spanish Jewry. And we talked a little bit about what was going on in the 10th century with Rabbi Chasda ibn Shaprut, who really is the first person to provide us with some information about the Jewish Khazars. And now I'd like to jump to the 12th century, because that's really when the Khuzari is written. It is written by a great rabbi named Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, who was born around the year 1075 and dies in Eretz Yisrael, at least according to legend, in the year 1140 or 1141. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi was born in Toledo, Spain, at a time when the caliphate, the Islamic caliphate that we've discussed previously, had already been disbanded. But southern Spain was still under Islamic rule, an Islamic rule that was still quite tolerant of Jewish practices and of Jewish autonomy. During his youth, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi was sent to the town of Lucena, a Spanish center of Torah study, where he studied under the great Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, the Rif, the great Talmudic commentator, and Rabbi Yosef ibn Migash, or the Rimigash, who was also a colleague of his. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi left us with a tremendous amount of beautiful poetry. We possess to this day over 800 of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's poems. Truly a man of the world, he did not confine his poetry to only Torah topics, but he also wrote about the human condition, about art, about love, about depression, about many other things. He also wrote what are known today as Shirei Tzion, the Songs of Zion. We recite some of these during the kinos that we say on Tisha B'Av. And the most famous one, because there's a song that has grown from it, it starts with the words Tzion, halo tish ali lishlom asirayach, O Zion, will you not inquire about the welfare of your imprisoned ones, meaning the Jews of the diaspora. He wrote Zmirot, and probably the most popular one today is the Shabbos Zmira Yom Shabbaton, which has the name Yehuda spelled acrostically if you go through each stanza. Now, I'm no expert on the poetry of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, unfortunately, but I would still be remiss if I passed over his contribution to Jewish poetry without making the following historical comment. Going back to the 10th century for a moment, we recall that the Nasi, the head of the Jewish community, was Rabbi Chasdai ibn Shaprut. Rabbi Chasdai had hired a brilliant linguist named Menachem ibn Suruk to compose poetry for his court, since he regularly had important correspondences and it was a sign of sophistication that at the beginning of a correspondence you would put a beautiful poetry as sort of the introduction. One of Menachem's contributions is the poem that forms the introduction to Rabbi Chasdai's letter to King Yosef that we discussed above in our discussion of the Chasdai letters, and indeed that poem is reprinted in the back of the Khuzari. Now, students of Rashi's commentary on the Torah, will also recognize the name Menachem ibn Saruk, or Rabbi Menachem ben Saruk, as someone that Rashi had often referenced in regard to grammatical issues, words that he needed to translate. So during this time, going back to the 10th century for a moment, there arose a great dispute and rivalry between two masterful Hebraic poets, Menachem ibn Saruk and another poet named Dunash ibn Labrat. The debate was as follows. When one writes poetry in Hebrew, should the poet emulate the complex form of metered poetry that is the hallmark of Arabic poetry? Or should Hebraic poetry have its own more relaxed standards of meter, as had been the traditional norm within the Jewish community up until that point? Now this machlokus at some point became quite serious between Menachem and Dunash. Dunash had maintained that Hebrew should emulate the Arabic style. Now, after all, we are living in an Arabic land, and we appreciate the sophisticated metered style of the Arabic language, and therefore we should try to use Hebrew in the same way. But Menachem felt that you should stay faithful to Hebraic tradition, and that actually forcing Hebrew to conform to Arabic norms was a degradation of the Hebrew language's natural beauty. Now this machlokus got very ugly and Chasdai ibn Shaprut had to get involved, and it ended up actually with Menachem ben Suruk ending up in jail. It's a sordid tale. What does this have to do with 150 years later in the times of Rebbe Yehuda Halevi? Well, we'll note when we get to it in the end of the second essay that at one point in the Kuzari, Rebbe Yehuda Halevi talks about the beauty, the natural beauty of the Hebrew language. And Rebbe Yehuda Halevi laments the fact that Hebrew appears at face value to be an inferior language to Arabic, which was the language of the dominant culture, the language of the street in his time. Rebbe Yehuda Halevi, in offering reasons why this appearance is deceptive, explains that Hebrew only appears to be ancillary to Arabic because Hebraic poets have made a horrible mistake of imitating Arabic meter in their poetry and have thus compromised the Hebrew language's natural beauty. The irony, of course, as a scholar named Hillel Halkin points out in his new biography of Rebbe Yehuda Halevi, is that Rebbe Yehuda Halevi himself had spent most of his life following the trend of imitating Arabic style and meter when writing Hebraic poetry. But apparently toward the end of his life, when he writes this section of the Kuzari, he came to his senses and he had admitted that this kind of imitation was a mistake. And so, as in many other areas that Rebbe Yehuda Halevi addresses in the Kuzari, Judaism has the best of everything already. And so to imitate others is only a degradation of the greatness that we possess as the Jewish people. If you're interested in reading more about Rebbe Yehuda Halevi's poetry, Halkin's biography, just called simply Yehuda Halevi, is a good place to start, and he will also provide a lot more biographical information that we're able to provide in these short talks. But although, as I've stated before, I can't vouch for everything that is contained in that book, and I hope you'll appreciate that. So continuing our biography of Rebbe Yehuda Halevi, he had a great friendship with Rabbi Moshe Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra family was quite an important family in Spain during this time. And he also had a friendship with Rabbi Moshe's nephew, Rabbi Avraham Ibn Ezra, who is the great composer of the famous Torah commentary known as Ibn Ezra. There may have even been a family connection between Rabbi Avraham Ibn Ezra and Rebbe Yehuda Halevi. There is an apocryphal story that is recorded in some historical works, which describes that Rebbe Yehuda Halevi and his wife, we'll call her Mrs. Halevi, had only one child. They had a daughter, and she was approaching marriageable age. And it seems that Rebbe Yehuda Halevi was not as concerned as his wife was about getting her married, until one day, in a fit of frustration, his wife continued to badger him about the need to marry off our daughter. And Rebbe Yehuda Halevi was becoming so perturbed that he slammed down his fist and finally said, "I swear that the next person who walks through this door will be our daughter's new husband." All of a sudden, you get a knock at the door. And who, of course, is it? It's a mishulach, someone collecting money for himself because he is a poor person going from city to city, itinerantly collecting money to be able to provide for himself, a man truly tattered in rags. And of course, they have to revive Mrs. Halevi, who is consumed by shock over hearing her husband's vow and then meeting up with this mishulach. But Rebbe Yehuda Halevi calms her down and says, "Well, let's see what this man is all about." And so they let him stay in their home for a few days. And as I mentioned, Rebbe Yehuda Halevi was a great poet, and he wrote some beautiful liturgy, that some of which is still preserved in the Sephardic prayer book. And one of these liturgical poems was written acrostically, that is, each line was another letter of the Aleph Beis. And when he got to the letter Resh, for some reason Rebbe Yehuda Halevi had writer's block and he didn't know how to fill in the verse. So he decided to go on out for a walk to clear his mind. And this schnorrer, this mishulach, this guest, sees the pen next to the piece of paper, and he fills in the letter Resh himself. Well, a few minutes later, Rebbe Yehuda Halevi comes back from his stroll, from his spatzir, and he comes back and he notices that the beautiful sentence has now been filled in with this amazing prose, and he's startled. Who could have filled this in? And he tells his wife, what's going on over here? And she says, "I don't know, it's just been the mishulach that's been in the house this whole time." And of course, they realize that they have someone quite extraordinary, and it turns out to be Rebbe Avraham Ibn Ezra, who himself never achieved great status economically, even though he achieved tremendous status as a great Torah scholar. And then, of course, the legend goes that Rebbe Yehuda Halevi's daughter married Rabbi Avraham ibn Ezra. And there is also the possibility that Rabbi Avraham, or one of the Ibn Ezras, perhaps the son of the Ibn Ezra and Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's daughter, actually traveled with Rabbi Yehuda Halevi to Eretz Yisrael before Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's death. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's love for Eretz Yisrael is manifest in his poetry, and it's manifest in the Kuzari, especially at the end of the Kuzari, where Rabbi Yehuda Halevi depicts the rabbi, who was one of the protagonists in the book that we'll discuss shortly. He leaves Khazaria and he emigrates to Eretz Yisrael. And he actually, this is the rabbi that is training and teaching the king all about Judaism. And this rabbi of the royal court, who has been educating the Khazar king, presumably King Bulan, who has, through his education, converted to Judaism, turns to the king one day and says, "It's time for me to leave." And the Khazar king is astonished. He says, "Why would you want to leave? I treat you so well." And the rabbi simply says, "I need to be in Eretz Yisrael. It's the only place where I can achieve perfection and true spirituality." And so it's therefore not surprising that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi himself spent the last few months of his life, at least according to what history tells us, at least according to one account, he actually made it to Eretz Yisrael and he lived for his last few days there. We have numerous correspondences about Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's departure from Spain. We know that he left to emigrate to Eretz Yisrael. We know that he made it into several communities in Egypt, including Alexandria and many other prominent Jewish communities that were in Egypt at the time. And we know that at least there's every indication to us that he eventually arrived in Eretz Yisrael. What happened after that point is unclear. But legend has it, as recorded in the Sefer Shalshalas HaKabbalah, that he reached the city of Jerusalem, and an Arab horseman trampled Rabbi Yehuda Halevi to death just as he was reciting the words of his beautiful song that we say on Tisha B'Av, "Tzion halo tish'ali l'shlom asirayach." Now, why has Rabbi Yehuda Halevi considered to be so great? In other words, we have many, many prominent rabbinic figures from the medieval period. What has earned him a very special, prominent spot in Jewish history is his great Jewish pride and his unapologetic stance on Judaism. And as we're going to discuss in our next little talk, we're going to try and explore why Rabbi Yehuda Halevi wrote the Kuzari, what his objectives and what his project was. But what we will see is that he was the great defender of the despised faith, which was the subtitle of the book, the Kuzari, the book of arguments in defense of the despised faith. He wrote this book at a time when Judaism was coming under great attack from both without and within. And that will be something that we take up momentarily in our next talk.